Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Easter Sunday, April 17th, 2022. It was snowing this morning. There is, I think there's still some snow on the ground. There's some snow on this tree here in Buffalo, New York. It's snowing on Easter in Buffalo. You're trying to shake the stereotype of being, oh, it's Buffalo, there's got to be snow. But no, it's snowing on Easter in April, the middle of April. It's past tax day. Join me from my immediate south, where it's probably even worse because it's even worse in the south towns. I don't know why anybody would live there, but Chris Gullo does. Joining me is ring announcer and comedian Chris Gullo.
Yeah, it is a very snowy Easter morning here in Buffalo, New York, but I am happy to be here. We have a fun show. We're going to talk about what this Warner Discovery merger in the aspect of how it's going to affect AEW. We're also going to discuss WWE running a live stadium show in the UK in September, as well as we now know when we're going to get the first quarter results for WWE business, as well as a little bit of digging into what this Brett Lauderdale Stephanie McMahon picture could be with Lauderdale's comments on his recent podcast. So that and a lot more here on this Sunday morning edition of WrestleNomics Radio.
Yes. If you would like to send in a super chat, Chris Gullo, how can they do that?
Yep. So actually, right there on the YouTube feed, you can just click the super chat button there. It's got the little dollar sign, and then you can put, I think, starts at a dollar and any amount that you feel suffice. You ask a question. If it's relatable to the topic we're talking about, we will ask it. If it's not, it will be asked in this show. Don't worry.
Okay. Where do you want to begin here?
We're going to start here with. Well, might as well start with, I would think, maybe the biggest story to really break down this week, and that is the merger that is happening with Warner Brothers and Discovery and how it's going to affect AEW.
Yes. So this is in the works for a long time, the merger of Discovery with Warner Media. Warner Media was formerly owned by what company, Chris Gullo?
Warner Media was formerly Time Warner. Which was
what? Well, someone acquired, I think,
it was AOL Time Warner.
Yeah, but who acquired it and is now getting rid of it? Who's your cell phone provider?
My cell phone provider isn't what the answer is. No, my cell provider is Mint Mobile. But are you thinking Spectrum or Verizon? Those are
no. AT&T. Decided to, much like, I guess, Comcast decided to acquire NBC Universal, because AT&T even owns, I believe, DirecTV.
Yes, that I know. I know they own DirecTV. Yeah.
So AT&T is involved in cable distribution. So they figured, I guess, it was a good idea to acquire a conglomerate of TV networks, which is what Warner Media is. Of course, Warner Media is HBO. It's TNT, TBS, True TV. Gosh, what else is in the Warner Media universe?
CW,
who could forget CW on broadcast? I think that's partially owned anyway. I guess that wasn't working out for them, and they decided to spin it off, and Discovery is merging. So I don't think anybody's being acquired here, but they're merging with Discovery. I know some people are wondering why is what is perceptibly a bigger company in Warner Media being acquired by Discovery. It's not quite being acquired, it's being merged. And the CEO of Discovery is now the CEO of this merged company, Warner Brothers Discovery. Who is the CEO of Discovery?
The CEO of Discovery here. So you're putting me on the spot. I wasn't ready. I had a question for you.
Who is this man? For people watching on YouTube, who's the man on the right side of the screen looking sternly with his legs crossed? Who is this man? His friends call him Zaz. Okay. That's David Zaslav.
Yeah. Yes. You're putting me on the spot, Brandon. Yes. You don't run these.
And so this is, let's get to the point here, how this relates to wrestling. This is reminding people a lot of a certain time especially if you're a wrestling historian and you rely heavily on wrestling history to inform your view of current wrestling business. This sounds, Chris Gullo, this sounds a lot like a certain situation in 2001, doesn't it?
Yes and no. Yes, there was an AOL Time Warner merger in 2001 when WCW was owned by Time Warner.
You say that like that's not the case today in the case of AEW. No. AEW, who owns AEW?
Tony Khan. And we're the Khan family.
And we're sure that there's no TV company that owns a stake in AEW?
I mean, I'm pretty positive that they don't now. Like, obviously,
this hasn't been reported anywhere. I'm not reporting this. But I would not be surprised if Warner Media owns a minority stake in AEW as a part of their agreement to be their broadcast partner. I was told something this week that made me more confident of that. I don't know that for a fact. That's my belief, let's call it, that Warner Media probably owns a minority stake in this company, in AEW. So that's not the same thing still as WCW being owned by Time Warner in 2001. That is a different story. I'm not saying that I'm very confident that the Khan family owns control of AEW.
I had a business question. You threw me off with the David Zaz stuff, but I had a business question I was going to ask you with this, because we are in the age of streaming. Is this the first time that two companies that own streaming services have merged together in the aspect of these are two really HBO Max and Discovery Plus are honestly two competing streaming services.
I think it could probably become semantic, right? Like, I believe Tubi was an independent company. And I believe Fox acquired them, and maybe Fox already had, I don't know, maybe Fox didn't have any streaming at that point. I mean, streaming becomes, I'm sure somewhere there's somebody with a very small streaming service who's, you know, has been acquired by somebody. But on this level, which is probably what you're kind of getting at, I'd probably not, in this age of streaming, but, but that's going to, so what happened with WCW? What led to the downfall of WCW? Who killed WCW?
Okay. So the narrative is Jamie Kellner, but if you read the Nitro book, there was a lot more factors than Jamie Kellner just not liking wrestling. His name escapes me. There was a Time Warner executive that was working for WWE at the time of the purchase of WCW, who happened to be fraternity brothers with a higher up in Time Warner as well.
I will say, so, Between the Sheets did a great series of Patreon podcasts covering the downfall of WCW, where they go over all the politics that may have been playing into WCW ultimately being canceled from Turner Networks.
Between that and the Nitro book, just tremendous.
Yeah. But some of the narrative in popular wrestling media culture, if that's a thing, is that Jamie Kellner decided he didn't like wrestling, canceled it. And the lesson that we have learned from this as wrestling historians is that the rhetorical question, who are the most powerful people in wrestling? Is it Vince McMahon? Is it Eric Bischoff? Is it Ted Turner? Is it Tony Khan? Yeah, who are the most powerful people in wrestling? Ah, tricked you. It's not wrestling executives. It's TV executives, because wrestling needs TV. Otherwise, it's kind of irrelevant. And Jamie Kellner was the most powerful person in WCW at that point, or affecting WCW. So lesson learned, David Zaslav is the most powerful person in wrestling today, correct?
I mean, they would be larger than, whoever the executive at NBC Comcast.
Brian Roberts. Yes. Is this different? I believe this is drastically different. I believe, in fact, 2001 is not 2022. They are, in fact, different years that are some 21 years apart. But maybe the ratings play somewhat into this. By 2001, which is the last year that WCW was around, they had decisively been beaten by Raw in the Monday Night Wars. I almost said Wednesday Night Wars. For people watching on YouTube, there's a chart charting the entirety of the Monday Night Wars there, where you can see Raw in the red going well ahead of WCW in the purple, even as Raw was starting to cool off in the ratings. WCW not only was being beaten in the ratings, and by the way, I don't know where Nitro would stack up in the rank, which is what we really focus on here to assess a program's TV value. If you're really highly ranked, you're probably really valuable. If you're less highly ranked, you're probably not that valuable. So I don't know where they ranked. I know Gullah was filing, going through some ratings, Ryan. Maybe we'll look into that deeper some other time. But not only were the TV ratings declining and well behind its competitor, but pay-per-view buys were down, certainly off from their peak. But even those last WCW pay-per-views were even less bought than, say, 95, pay-per-views in 95 and 96. House show business had really cooled off as well. I bet, and I bet you there's some support for this in the Nitro book and lots of wrestling history, that I bet managing WCW was a bit of a headache for the people at Time Warner who were overseeing WCW. Just a guess on my part. So there's that. Whereas we look at
the nerve, yeah, too, is ad buys too. Ad buys were not good for WCW programming compared to most stuff on TBS and TNT.
Okay.
At that time period.
Yeah. And I think maybe one of the things I gathered from the Between the Sheets podcast on the subject, and which sounds right, is that the visions for TNT and TBS, which were the networks at the time that were broadcasting Nitro and Thunder, those visions for what those networks were going to be was changing. And then that plays a big role to this day in what ends up on a network. Does this wrestling show fit into the vision for the network? It's not going to be a wrestling show on the Food Network. That is a Discovery property, but unless we're coming up with some sort of food fighting themed wrestling show, that's not going to be on the Food Network. Someone's going to pitch that now.
Bobby Flay versus the World, literally wrestling.
Yes. Yes. Guy Fieri is someone's manager. Anyway, in this case, we have an AEW that seems to be on an upward trajectory in some areas. We'll talk about maybe some other questionable areas here for AEW, but this is a program whose rank has improved of late in a lot of ways. I would argue that AEW has, while it's a much, much smaller business, it's about 1/10, 1/8 of the business in terms of revenue that WWE is, it has a lot more upward mobility to grow its popularity and to become a stronger competitor of WWE over time. It's also improved its rank among programs generally. Raw and SmackDown are still doing very well and doing better than AEW is in that ranking in 18-49. We're focusing on 18-49 here because that's what determines the ad rates. That's probably what plays more into TV rights value than total viewership does. Probably not as much of a discrepancy in 2001 when there wasn't such an age bias, an age skew in television viewership, linear television viewership. Anyway, so Dynamite's ratings look pretty good. They've been doing number three lately behind the two NBA games on ESPN in recent weeks. There's been a number of times, though, where, and when I say number one, I mean among cable originals, what we're showing on the screen here includes broadcast primetime, even, because we have to include SmackDown here. So there's that. TV ratings are pretty strong. And so why would Discovery or the merged Warner Discovery cancel or not bid aggressively for AEW in the next round? By the way, the TV rights deal for AEW, that will expire, assuming they will or already have picked up the one-year option. AEW's US TV rights deal will expire in December 2024. And I suppose the speculation would be that, There's new management involved. Maybe they won't be as hot about the idea of having wrestling on their networks, and they won't bid aggressively for it or won't really show interest in it at all. And then what will happen? And the question in that scenario would be, well, is there interest from other TV networks for AEW? Would there be? I mean, who'd even be the potential players at that point? You've already got NBCU taken. It's questionable whether Fox would continue to want to deal, would win or want to continue to have SmackDown on. I don't know. Viacom, CBS, or excuse me, they've been rebranded to Paramount, is the one big traditional network conglomerate that doesn't have wrestling right now. So that player is out there. Then there's a bunch of digital players, but ultimately, I think a wrestling program, a mainstream wrestling program of the likes of WWE or AEW, needs to be on a high reach platform and needs to be regularly on old fashioned traditional TV, as much as people listening who may be younger may think that nobody watches traditional TV anymore. It still makes up the majority of the TV time that human beings in the United States spend looking at a TV set. It's traditional TV. So anyway, where was I going? I think it's unlikely. This was ultimately the point we've been building up to here. I think it's unlikely that AEW will be in any kind of trouble about interest in their TV rights because of the merger of Warner and Discovery. Why? For one thing, AEW is deeply involved with Warner Media, not just domestically, but internationally too. Now, that might have been the case with WCW and Time Warner. I don't know. But it's worth pointing out that AEW is being broadcast on TNT Siri in Germany. It's a Warner Media property. They're being broadcast on Space in Latin America. It's a Warner Media property. TNT Africa, it's a Warner Media property. Toonami in France, it's a Warner Media property. They're also just made a deal. Actually, that the deal was announced after, conspicuously, after the announcement of the merger of Warner Media and Discovery. It was announced that they have a deal in India. AEW has a deal in India, and they're now being broadcast on Eurosport. Who owns Eurosport? Discovery. Discovery. So almost done. Warner Media.
We have a super chat, though.
Okay, great. Almost done. Warner Media is deeply involved with the distribution of AEW domestically and internationally. Discovery is involved in potentially what could be their biggest TV market, their second biggest TV market. It's WWE's second biggest TV market, so why shouldn't it be AEW's second biggest TV market? More about the India TV market to come later in the program. And I believe this is not a fact, but I believe that Warner Media owns a minority stake. So they're especially interested in the success of the AEW business overall. Okay, what?
Okay, all right. I'll give it a super chat, but I agree with you. Just from the simple mindset of sports TV rights, and we consider AEW wrestling a sport in that landscape, are very hot right now. And why would Warner Discovery want to drop something that could possibly, go to another network and be even, continue to be successful? In the aspect of, people want to keep sports properties,
right?
They don't want to lose them.
And WCW in 2001, it was such a different media universe than it is today, where in this universe today, live sports have become exceedingly valuable because it is the thing that people want to watch live. That was not the case nearly to the extent it is today in 2001.
And not to mention too, sports starting to go towards back to the big broadcast networks and the streaming services now. So if you're a cable network, you're trying to grab as much as you can out there to kind of have a step ahead of from other cable networks as far as when it comes to sports programming.
Yes.
But I'll get to the super chat here. CWJ128, thank you for your super chat. Interesting question. What was Big Bang Theory ratings in Q4 21 on Wednesday night compared to AEW in Q1 22? This should give an idea if Warner Brothers Discovery sees value in AEW going forward. Thank you for the show.
What was Big Bang? Thank you for the super chat. What was Big Bang Theory's ratings Q4 21 on Wednesday compared to? We could look it up. if I open one of my spreadsheets here. I'm not totally clear why that would be important, because Big Bang Theory is on before AEW. But I would imagine it's similar. I will open up Chris Cole, I think, just earlier today. There's the Dynamite quarter hours as Excel opens. Chris Cole, I think, just today discovered ratingsryan.com. Chris Cole, did you know there's a script on my computer that scrapes ratingsryan.com every Monday? Because that's when it's the only source that I know of for cable reruns that's reporting them publicly.
Yeah, I found that amazing. He's got the top 200 on there.
Yeah. So what we have here, actually, this is exactly what we need to answer this question, right? So these are the 7:30. These are the 7:30 airings. We can kind of see this. Could make it a little bigger. This is for people watching on YouTube, obviously. We will describe it best we can here for audio. So what we're looking at here are all of the 7:30 airings for The Big Bang Theory on TBS on Wednesday, the episode that is on right before Dynamite. These are sorted. Let's put them in the opposite order. So this is not the entirety of Q4, but this is a chunk of it. This is November. I don't know why there's no October in here, but this is November and December. So this is how many episodes in Q4? It's just 7. So what we have here is the demo was in November and December was anywhere from a 0.24 to a 0.32. And what it's doing now is in Q1 is doing, we could probably just average this, right? That is in Q1, it's doing an average in the demo of 0.32, and then a 0.27. So 0.32, it's doing better in Q1 than in Q4, essentially. That's in total, that's in the demo, which by my guess, based on how much AEW wants everybody to think about the demo, I imagine that's what TNT, or in this case, TBS cares about more. So the average in total viewership was 1.17 million viewers in November to December, 1.17. And then in Q1, it is 1.36 million viewers. There may be seasonality that's a factor in that, but Q1 is doing better than Q4. So there's the answer to that. And we can look at other aspects of AEW's business. I was just going to point out how, attendances for Dynamite have been okay, relative to, I don't know what you would expect. They have definitely flattened out. March averaged 4,000 tickets distributed according to WrestleTix. They're doing a little bit better, but not much better. They have cooled off from those really hot months of the fall and the winter. And we were seeing the opposite in WWE. So take that, WWE haters. And I also wanted to point out in a quick tangent that AEW's out. This is since the return to touring. So this is within the last year. AEW has been to Dynamite only, has been to 31 different cities. Raw has been to 34. SmackDown has been to 37. So the diversity of venues that AEW has been to has not been as strong as Raw or SmackDown. And we've seen AEW will soon do its first ever show in California. That appears to be selling very well, something like well over 10,000 tickets distributed. AEW has still never been to Canada, has never done a show outside the US, has never been to the UK. AEW has done 2 UK tours. Nonetheless, doing okay live event business. Live events are a secondary revenue source for wrestling at this point, as we've learned. The big money is in media, is in selling mainly live broadcasts of your program. Pay-per-view business is doing much better than WCW's pay-per-view business was doing in the year 2001. Pay-per-view business is all their pay-per-views are up year over year. I think that will be coming to an end with All Out. I bet they can top Double or Nothing of last year, this year, but All Out, I don't think they're going to break that CM Punk return pay-per-view. Now, management, the big question would be, well, because of the merger, is AEW dealing with different people overseeing that relationship between AEW and the Turner networks? My understanding is based on basically based on how things are written about in press here and based on like LinkedIn profiles and their titles. It looks to me like TNT, TBS, and True TV are managed by a lot of the same personnel at Warner Media. Anyway, as a result of the merger, is AEW still going to be dealing with the same people? Well, according to Adweek, this is a week ago from Thursday, April 7th, Adweek had this information about some of the leadership change.
Yep. So with the Discovery Warner Media merger to set to cross the finish line as early as Friday, David Zaslav, who will be chairman and CEO of the combined company, has said it is leadership team for Warner Brothers Discovery. The team includes expanded roles for J.B. Perrette, who will lead all streaming efforts at the company, and Kathleen Finch, who will have oversight of almost all the company's U.S. networks. Finch, currently Chief Lifestyle Brands Officer at Discovery, will take the new role of Chairman and Chief Content Officer, U.S. Networks Group, overseeing more than 40 U.S. networks. Her reports will include Nancy Daniels, Chief Content Officer, Discovery Factual Networks, Brett Weitz, General Manager of TBS, TNT and True TV, and Tom Asham, president of Warner Brothers Global Kids, Young Adults, and Classics.
Okay. So I don't know what the best way is to deal with this, but it looks to me like there are three layers of people here, that, and maybe even four if we put David Zaslav on the top, right? There's David Zaslav, then there's Kathleen Finch, and then there's Brett Weitz, and then his subordinate, I believe, is Sam Linsky. Okay, Sam Linsky deals with AEW. I don't know that we need to read all these people's bios, but I do have them here. Why don't you tell us about Sam Linsky, Gullo, since you know everything about him.
Well, Sam Linsky, in this role, he would be responsible for overseeing the development and production of the linear network scripted original programs alongside Adrian O'Rain as Senior Vice President of Scripted Original Programming, TNT, TBS, and True TV. Based in Los Angeles, Linsky reports to Brett Weitz, where he worked closely with Weitz on strategy and execution of long-term plans centered around the network's evolution, as well as internal teams to define project scope, goals, and deliverables, including finance and strategic planning. Linsky also manages the partnership with All Elite Wrestling for Warner Media, AEW Dynamite, the fan favorite wrestling series that debuted in 2019. TNT's number one original program and number one wrestling show on Wednesday nights to build the franchise's success. TNT created AEW Rampage, currently the number one unscripted series on cable.
Yes. This is all from Warner Media's official website. So there's Sam Linsky here and all these people have just magnificent promo photos. Here's Brett Weitz, who's Sam Linsky's boss, I gather. Look at we don't have the full picture here, but he's like sitting on a stool. He looks really engaged and ready to have a really engaging conversation with you here. So, it's something WrestleNomics, it reminds me, we need to invest in some really excellent, promo photos. But yeah, so I know there were, stories about layoffs as a result of merging these companies. It's probably a lot of redundancy, and that's part of the benefit to the business, not to the employees who get laid off, obviously, but it's part of the benefit of the business that you merge your resources together. And then one of the things you don't need as much anymore is all that labor. So, it sounds as if some people have been laid off. But it doesn't sound as if the people who AEW deals with has dramatically changed. So there's that. Could it be the case though, that, I know I've seen people speculate that, well, if Kathleen Finch, who's not going to be overseeing the person who's overseeing the AEW relationship, if she decides she doesn't like blood and guts, bad for AEW, perhaps, remains to be seen. And not clear to me how involved anybody beyond Sam Linsky, beyond Brett Weitz, who are the people who actually authorize, yeah, we're willing to pay in this next round three times what we're paying now for AEW. Who makes that decision? I don't know. And that's really, I guess, one of the key questions. So there's that. I remain optimistic about both WWE and AEW's next round of TV negotiations. Someone was asking me earlier this week, so I threw this illustration together. What are my baseline expectations for the next round of negotiations? 1.5x for U.S. rights for WWE. That would move them from, this is Raw and SmackDown only. Don't delude yourself and think that NXT is this $50 million property. It's not. This is Raw and SmackDown only. Is currently $465 million. You multiply that by 1.5, we get to about $700 million per year, average annual basis, if that's the case. And I believe this rate is roughly baked into the stock price right now, where it hovers around just over $60 per share, just over $4.5 billion in market capital. If WWE gets a better deal than 1.5x, stock price will react very positively, perhaps too positively as it did 5 years ago. If it gets a deal that's not as good as 1.5x, stock market will react negatively. This is all ways off, right? This is like spring of 2023. For AEW, my expectation would be around tripling the value of Rampage and Dynamite combined. Currently, for $44 million average annual value, $44 million. You multiply that by three, that's about $130 million. That would, you know, I'm saying triple AEW, because we're a very biased AEW program. Triple AEW, only 1.5 times WWE. Still, as people can see on YouTube, that still leaves WWE multiple times bigger in US TV rights value than AEW. In fact, $131 million, for the most astute WrestleNomics listeners, $131 million probably sounds familiar to you, because that was the US TV rights value of WWE's programs after the 2014 deal with NBC Universal. The disappointing deal that they got just after the network launched. But anyway,
we did get a super chat real quick.
Yes.
Glennie Kodra asks, is there a sense of profitability yet for AEW?
According to Tony Khan in comments that he gave to Forbes several months ago, Forbes magazine, he says that AEW would be profitable if not for a eight-figure investment he made in gaming. I would think that AEW is not profitable right now. They're probably getting a little bit more on US TV rights this year than last year, next year than this year, because they probably are guaranteed to escalate a little bit by, like, you know, 5 to 10% per year. But I would think probably not profitable. And the game here is to get to this, what we're showing on the screen here, is to get to this next TV rights deal. It's fine to lose money here in the short term, because they're playing for the gamble that in this next deal, we can triple, maybe more than triple, our TV rights value. And then we become a really sustainable, profitable business. And all that loss, non-profitable time, becomes an investment that pays off in this time. So probably not profitable now, probably not profitable anytime in the next year or two, but maybe 2024, or I'm sorry, it'd be 2025, right? Because it probably expires December 2024. So 2025 and forward, I would think that is their expectation. A great upgrade in TV rights value, TV rights fees, profitable after that would be what I would think is their financial planning and expectations. There's that. Now, the point I want to make is why 3x AEW and why only 1.5x WWE? As we know, WWE, in terms of total viewership, does double what Dynamite does. To not even consider Rampage, which, you know, has like 500,000 viewers. Dynamite has about 1 million. Raw lately has nearly 2 million. SmackDown on Fox, better network, has well over 2 million. But despite doubling AEW in viewers, Turner/Warner Media/Warner Bros. Is getting a really great deal based on the number of viewers that they're getting. So Fox and NBCU are paying around 91 cents per viewer per hour. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this that is not convoluted and arcane and hard to follow. But every hour that you spend in front of the TV watching WWE products, which I know Chris Colo does every Monday, Tuesday, Friday, every hour that you spend on that couch watching WWE entertainment, you're justifying about 91 cents in value that the network is paying to WWE. But every hour that you spend in front of the couch watching AEW, just 33 cents, just 33 cents. So that's a much larger discrepancy than the discrepancy in viewers. The value is it's AEW is a way cheaper property right now per viewer per hour. We have to put hours in there because WWE is doing 5 hours a week. AEW is doing 3 hours a week. That's just if we consider total viewership. And I would venture to put out there that total viewership does matter, because total viewership, we're talking about subscribers, and subscription revenue is where cable networks get the majority of their revenue from. For Fox broadcast network, it's the minority, but they still get a lot of the revenue from subscribers. Anyway, if we look at the demo, the discrepancy is even greater. In other words, AEW is an even more of a bargain. It's four times cheaper than WWE. If we focus only on the demo, you could justify, based on viewership alone, which is not the only thing that's going to be that a future deal is going to be based on, but based on TV ratings alone compared to WWE, you can make an argument that AEW should get a four times increase in their TV rights fees compared to WWE. If our product should be valued in the same way that WWE's product is valued, I can hear the alarm bells going off in certain people's heads right now. But if per viewer, keep in mind, and I'm taking into account that WWE has a larger audience in P18 and 49, which it does, quadruple AEW's TV rights fees, because WWE is getting quadruple the value per viewer per hour. 66 cents for AEW. You're still in the demo, Gullo. You're worth 66 cents every hour that you watch Dynamite. But every hour, this is why you should watch Raw and SmackDown more. Every hour that you spend watching Raw and SmackDown, you're worth more than $2.50. Four times
the difference. I'll be at Raw Live tomorrow.
Great. You're going to Raw.
I forgot about that.
I do have the seating map in here. you're going to Raw. What are you going to do there?
Me and a couple of buddies, some local wrestlers. We're going to just get cheap tickets.
Are you paying for tickets? Are you being
comfortable? Yeah, I am paying for a ticket. Yes.
Okay. Will you be meeting with Vince?
I'll be meeting with Vince Valor. Yes. I'll be going with Vince Valor.
Yeah. Okay. A local independent wrestler. yes. So there's that. Now we've ranted. Here's my math on how I did that, if you care. I'm not going to go through that in audio, but there's that. Yes, that's all. Anything else to add to that before we move on?
I mean, just overall, it's a different landscape than it was in 2001. Nitro was a declining product, steadily declining product as far as live attendance and TV ratings, and AEW, some weeks it's flat and dips a tiny bit, but it doesn't have this giant drop off that Nitro was getting. I mean, Nitro lost 3 million viewers in the span of I think 8 months or something like that, 8-9 months. and that's huge. So, it's a product that is growing, and why would Discovery, not want that? Now, we actually had people in the chat bring up the fact that Discovery leans a lot on unscripted series, cheap unscripted series programming. But once again, this being a sports property and them having the leverage of already, having it on their network, I can't see them getting rid of it. Now, could there be other programs in TBS TNT that might get the boot? Possibly, but I can't see this.
It's live sports, which is increasingly the thing that's keeping the value there for traditional TV networks. And I would add too that we were talking about, speculating about what's the next deal going to be worth for WWE and AEW. Dog is just running here. I would think that what's on the table too for the next round is we never find out what whether there was a 4X upgrade for AEW or a 1.5X upgrade. Because I got to think, if I'm NBC Universal or if I'm Warner Brothers Discovery, I just want to buy these companies. Because why? There's no end to the growth in the valley of live sports properties. This supposed sports rights bubble that's going to burst, it's never going to burst. I'm going to have to give, if I'm Warner Discovery, I'm going to have to give AEW like a 3X, 4X increase to keep them around and happy. Who knows what I'll have to give them in like the 5 years after that. Why don't I just acquire this company, buy it outright, and not have to worry about leasing this content over and over again? And if I'm NBC Universal, I'm deeply involved with WWE, just like Warner is deeply involved with AEW in terms of distribution. I just want to buy WWE. I just want to buy it. Replace Vince McMahon as head of creative. And I just want to buy WWE and not have to worry about increasing the rights fees every 5 years.
Speaking of rights fees, we have another super chat. Thank you all for your super chats, by the way.
Thank you.
Monique asks, is the new AEW money deal projection, including a potential Ring of Honor weekly show, does that change the overall cost in your opinion?
It's possibly more content, which is interesting. Like we talked about Tony Khan's interview that he did last week with Mark Grimondi from ESPN. And I thought it was very conspicuous how Tony Khan speaks as if the only TV network that exists for him is Warner Media. He wants to do a deal with Ring of Honor and Warner Media. He's not speaking as if he wants to do a TV deal with whoever the best partner is, or maybe many partners that he would consider. He speaks as if Warner Media is the only TV network conglomerate that exists, which fuels my belief that Warner Media owns a stake in AEW. But it also that doesn't explain to me why Ring of Honor is owned separately by Tony and not just merged into AEW LLC. But anyway, if I can refocus and look at the question again, it's just off the screen for me. Can you read the question again, Gull, please?
Yep. Is the new AEW money deal projection including a potential Ring of Honor weekly show?
Right.
And no, does that change your overall cost?
I guess it would. So I was considering just 3 hours of content there, right? 2 hours of Dynamite, 1 hour of Rampage. Who knows what will happen? I understand the last episode on Sinclair for Ring of Honor is coming up. But it, you know, maybe there's another hour that they can do there. What does that do for a TV rating though? I can't imagine it doing better than NXT. Could do as well as NXT, I guess. Depends on what network it's on. Depends on what time slot it's on. Who knows? But it's a nice supplemental value, but it's not a huge difference, because if I think that NXT, and why do I think that NXT is not worth that much? I think it's pretty well illustrated in this chart, where you can see NXT in terms of its rank among programming generally is well below the rest of the field. Rampage is well above NXT in the demo, and its weekly rank in the demo. Rampage is well above NXT. It's been in decline, but it's also in a less favorable time slot than NXT is in. Rampage would be doing even better if it had the benefit of being on Tuesday night at 8 rather than Friday night at 10, excuse me. So Ring of Honor, I think, would have a value, assuming it doesn't way outperform in ratings relative to what I think it could do. I think Ring of Honor adds roughly the value of something like, you know, of something like NXT or something like Miz and Mrs. or something like Roads to the Top. It's a nice addition, and you can probably get enough value back to Tony Khan or back to AEW to pay for the production. And it has the sort of research and development value of this is a way to develop talent and to start to get them over and to also get them experience and improve them as wrestlers. So it has a lot of long-term value to AEW, and you can probably get enough money out of a broadcaster to pay for the production also, but not a huge addition to TV rights value, because TV rights value is mostly concentrated in these most highly ranked programs.
We did get another super chat, but I have a quick question. Now, this is where, like, I think Ring of Honor weekly show could be a property that also could be on a streaming service, you know, and with this Warner Discovery merger, though, I bring up the my first in the beginning of the show was, do you think they possibly merge these streaming services, or if they're two separate entities, HBO Max and Discovery Plus, the chances of Ring of Honor being on one of those is probably very likely. But if you merge them together, I don't know.
Why would merging them change it?
I mean, I don't think they're going to focus on a certain amount of programming. Like, there's only so much focus and resources. Why would they pay for a Ring of Honor show when they are literally lumping all these original programming into one? You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm off at that point there, but
no, I think, I don't know. You could have Ring of Honor on True TV or something like that, 1 hour show in primetime. I don't know. But I think it's still quite likely that someday AEW gets a Peacock like deal to put some form of their content on some sort of Warner Discovery streaming platform, probably a merged HBO Max and Discovery Plus, something like that. Maybe it involves pay-per-view for them, maybe not, but I think that's something that eventually happens.
So Tim B with the super chat, if Warner did own part of AEW, wouldn't there be some sort of SEC filing when that happened?
No, because so Warner Media until this moment has been owned by AT&T, which is a much larger company than Warner Media. So it would have to, the transaction would have to be material. In my very cursory understanding of the SEC rules, this is sort of relative to the questions related to the question of like Sinclair, I understand has an earnings report coming up. I'm sure Lavi Margolin will be watching closely. We're probably not even going to get detail about Sinclair's transaction to Tony Khan for the Ring of Honor property, because the Ring of Honor property is probably not big enough to be material to Sinclair's business. And would a minority stake in AEW, especially whenever they acquired it, if they did, speculation only, if they did, would not be big enough. Let's imagine a universe where Warner Media is an independent publicly traded company. I don't think it would even be big enough to have to disclose in that scenario, let alone a scenario in which Warner Media is but a subsidiary of a much larger company, AT&T. So that's a pretty small transaction on the scale of those businesses.
All right. I think we can finally
thanks to
move on, but this was a very interesting topic.
Did I go through everything? I think so. Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. So, we're going to move on, discuss this here. Satnam Singh is All Elite. He, debuted this Wednesday on Dynamite, as well as was on the Battle of the Belts last evening, making an appearance as well.
Did you watch, Dynamite? Did you watch his debut
in the overall? I have seen the debut, and I also saw what happened last night. Give a little update, or not update, a little background behind Satnam Singh, as I'm the sports guy here. I try to be. So he was a draft pick from the Dallas Mavericks. He never played in the NBA. He played in the NBA G League for 2 years. So he was a 2015 draft pick in the second round. He played in the G League for 2 years, which is the NBA Developmental League, from 2015 to 2016. His stats were not mind blowing at all. Like, per game, he averaged, let's see here. So yeah, per game, he averaged about, he played 19 games of 15 and 16, only 8 in 16, 17, but about 1.6 points, per game, and minutes were about 6 minutes, overall per game. So not an impact player in the NBA G League. Obviously basketball didn't work out for him, and they're looking this avenues. And very impressive height, 7'4". And I'm assuming he's being trained by QT Marshall, but I don't know if we found that out yet. Anthony Ogogo posted a picture.
He's being trained at the Nightmare Factory. I believe that's been public.
And Anthony Ogogo, who was the other athlete turned pro wrestler by AEW, posted a picture. And now I want to bring up this topic. These moves are very WWE-ish. And the aspect of get these larger life characters and these people from other backgrounds and turn them into pro wrestlers. We've seen for the most part, AEW has just taken pro wrestlers and put them on their programming. But now we have Anthony Ogogo, Paige VanZant, and Satnam Singh now.
I was going to say Jade Cargill, even. I don't believe she ever wrestled before AEW, right?
Nope, she did not, yeah.
I mean, this was, you watched this, I don't know if you watched it live. Did you watch it live?
I didn't watch it live. I watched it probably like an hour or so after.
Are you, how did, oh no, the internet. How did Twitter react to this? How did some people react to this?
Twitter did not like it.
Okay.
And did not like the way they debuted him. They did the lights off, lights on thing. And I think Tony Khan even commented on this. I want to say it was Busted Open. He commented on this, that he probably would have done the debut differently as well. Let's just say the reviews of last night are much better than the reviews of Wednesday of how they're presenting him.
Okay. I think Dave Meltzer's reported that this was part of the motivation of putting Satnam Singh on TV, or, you know, trying to develop him into a star, is to appeal to the Indian market, to appeal to their Indian TV partner, which is Discovery, which Eurosport. So you said it was WWE like. What do you mean by that?
Yes. Oh, look at this large guy, and he's an athlete. Yeah, we got to get him on TV. So tall. He's so tall. I don't think height is, and I don't know Tony Khan like personally or how he thinks, but I don't think height is a factor for him when thinking if a wrestler can be a star in his company. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think it felt WWE like in that, at least to me, and maybe I'm, you know, I have a skewed view of it because I do a show called WrestleNomics. But in that, it was appealing to a business partner with less concern. This is how it could be perceived. It was appealing to a business partner, that is their TV partner in India, rather than at the expense of the sentiment of their fans, which is something that has increasingly been the case for WWE, as more and more of their revenue has come not from fans, and more of their revenue has come from business partners, and will continue to come from business partners over time. People love this chart that I'm showing on the screen. It illustrates something that resonates to people where, you know, around the year 2018, around the timing of the beginning of the Saudi deal, where they start getting $100 million from the Saudi government every year, then they start to get more, the majority of their revenue, WWE does, gets the majority of their revenue from business partners rather than directly from consumers. And that will become more so the case because of the growth in value of TV rights fees, which are guaranteed to escalate every year. Now, people talk as if, oh, thank God AEW is not that. AEW is exactly the same in terms of that breakdown. Less so in 2021, probably, than 2020. Mainly because of the pandemic, and they didn't, you know, AEW wasn't able to sell very many tickets because of the pandemic. But AEW, I strongly believe, gets the majority of their revenue not from fans, even though they have better relationship with their fans than WWE may. AEW gets the majority of their revenue from business partners, and that will probably continue to be the case, and will become more so the case with time and with the increase of TV rights payments, especially if they get a 3x increase. Or a 4x increase, as I'm speculating. So that's a balance. That's a balance that that AEW has to make, and in terms of not alienating their fans and not hurting their relationships with their business partners, or making sure they're having wonderful relationships with their business partners. Lord knows they love their business partners and will do anything for their business partners, because ultimately their business partners hold the key to their distribution, their ability to reach those fans. But without those fans and without a good relationship with those fans, you're just told nonstop action. And we know what happened with them. We're not going to break down all the reasons why that angle on Wednesday night didn't go well. But Tony did say that he listened to somebody who had 30 years experience in the business. That was somebody else's idea, but nonetheless, he approved it, which makes me, it reminds me of one of the things that frustrates me a lot about wrestling, which is that people who had their greatest success, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, oftentimes they will suggest ideas that are not the greatest ideas for today. We have all these highly respected veterans who have, you know, 30 years, 40 years, 20 years of experience, whatever it might be. These people who had their breakout success roughly that long ago, now suggesting, and we all worship them as if they are infallibly right, because there's no way to objectively measure whether or not they're right. We just sort of take their credibility as intrinsically has to be true. I mean, this dynamic is entirely what fuels the seminar market in independent wrestling. But oftentimes, you know, they give you advice that's great and super important, but just, I think just as often, they're just as capable of suggesting ideas that may well have worked 20, 30 years ago, but will not work, especially for a new wrestler in this time. This may or may not be related to Satnam Singh's situation, but it comes to mind.
All right. And, I guess this would be a good place to put it before we kind of move on to the next story. Tony Khan is teasing another huge announcement this Wednesday. I read somewhere is to the belief of a super show with New Japan in the summer.
Yeah, Super J-Cast was the first to break that. Yes, there's in I believe June is the there's a date that's been mentioned. Another announcement.
Well, it makes the whole New Japan World story that we talked about last week just make more sense, that continuing relationship between the two companies.
Yeah.
But Arya, we will move on to our next story here. And we have heard talks of it, but now it has been official that on and this is from Stanford Gennagear, the Business Wire. WWE today announced that the first major WWE stadium to be event to be held in the United Kingdom for more than 30 years will emanate from Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Wales on Saturday, September 3rd, 2022.
Yes. I don't have much to add to this, but we expected this. This is sort of confirmation of what I think people like Alex McCarthy had been reporting, that they're going to do a big stadium show in September, Saturday, Labor Day weekend, same weekend. There's no date announced for All Out, but same weekend as All Out will be. On different continents, nonetheless, that will be a big weekend for wrestling. And will it compete? Will it cut into AEW's pay-per-view buys performance? We'll see. Somewhat, maybe.
They're going to air at different times, for sure. Well, different days, really, too. So we don't
know if this is going to, if All Out is going to be Saturday or Sunday. We would have to look back to see what was it in years prior. I don't know if it was Saturday or Sunday last year, but we'll see.
Real quick too, Deuce did a super chat, just a comment, kind of what I pointed brought up earlier. Ring of Honor doesn't need a traditional TV necessarily, could absolutely work as first run content on HBO Max in the US.
Sure. I mean, I think that's not out of the question, especially if it's a good enough deal for Ring of Honor, for Tony Khan, in terms of payment or otherwise. I think it just depends on reach. It depends on money. It depends on anything else that comes with it, both, you know, for both sides. If I were him though, I would want it to be on some sort of higher reach platform, like even True TV. And I think a lot of, you know, I should have mentioned earlier when we were talking about speculation for TV rights. I think that it's quite likely that both of these TV deals are going to end up, it's not just going to be WWE's renewed with, you know, staying on USA Network, staying on Fox, but that X number of Raw episodes are going to go on Peacock. X number of, I don't know. Fox doesn't really have a platform there, right? And that's part of the issue. But that, you know, that's another story. It's something we talked about in the past. But I do think streaming rights will be a part of these deals, probably for WWE, maybe for AEW too.
We got another super chat. This could be ballooned into a much bigger topic, but MJ, he asked, what would the downside to Tony Khan buying New Japan? What would be the downside of that?
The cost.
I don't think that would happen, but
I don't think Bushiroad's going to part with that. There's probably running a company in the United States is probably very different from running a company in Japan. I think just the connections, the understanding of the market that one would have to have, if he's going to oversee somebody else to do it, I guess, but that doesn't seem to be his style so far. He just wants to do it himself.
I think there's going to be a future partnership when it comes to New Japan and the United States, though. We see they just had Windy City Riot in Chicago. They really are trying to run shows. They're mostly on the weekends, and AEW doesn't run weekend house shows, so maybe they would lend some resources and help, but I don't see a purchase or anything.
No. I guess you could make the argument that, well, they want to be a global company, and they clearly don't know how to do that. They know how to do good business in Japan when there's not a pandemic. But, you know, I could make them a stronger global company than they can make themselves a global company. But also Bushiroad is not a small company in this scale of business. It is substantially smaller than WWE. But I don't know. I think it would take a lot for Bushiroad to part with New Japan.
All right, move on here to some viewership charts. You got merchandise revenue and a lot of WWE statistics to throw at us here.
I just bring this up before we talk a little about Google Trends. Jesse Collins was asking me, responded to something on Twitter. I guess because I was showing how, you know, if we look at this animation real quick, we look at, this is Google Trends in the United States, Google web search in the United States. This is illustrating WWE. We've got the other promotions well below it. And as we can see the animation going here, we get to a peak in 2016. A peak. If we look at just a still image of this, when does it peak? It peaks in October 2016. Web search is not economics necessarily. I think it tells us something about economics, but it does not have anything to do with direct revenue generation. But it would suggest that did popularity peak for WWE in October 2016? And when I say peak, I'm talking about a timeline of roughly from, you know, 2010 to the present. It was 2016 the most popular year for WWE in that time? There's some other consumer-based metrics to suggest that, that's the case. We know, if we're just talking about finances, because of WWE's enormous revenue that they generate from business partners, that yes, they're doing better financially in this year and in last year than they have done in any year prior, and they will do better this year and the year after that and the year after that because of the nature of growing TV rights values. But anyway, I'm talking about fan interest, consumer interest. I think WWE did peak in popularity leading up to 2016 and falling thereafter. I guess Jesse's point was that maybe we're not giving enough credit to that time and maybe to the talent that were featured during that time. Because, okay, what else do we see to support this? Well, we see, I don't know about TV ratings. You know, TV ratings are hard to judge in this environment. It's kind of the same thing because for opposite reasons for the network subscribers. But if we look at merchandise revenue, venue merchandise revenue is largely influenced by ticket sales. But if we look at online merchandise sales, those grew and, you know, from 2012 every year, peaking in 2017. And then declining in years after, and then we get to the pandemic stage where maybe it's offsetting some lack of venue merchandise. But in product licensing revenue, which is among other things driven by video game sales and toy sales, that does peak in 2017. Remember, the Google web search is peaking in October 2016, so towards the end of 2016, I guess that would add up. Worldwide ticket sales, according to WWE's ICC filings, which are supposed to be paid ticket sales, does not include comps. I'm combining international and North America here, but we do see an increase peaking in 2017 for total sales. Now, I know that's driven by probably an increase in the number of live events that they're running, but the average ticket sales per event peaked in 2016 and then fell thereafter. And then we see web search both worldwide and in the United States peaking in 2016. So I think, why did this happen? Why would interest in WWE, if it did, seems to have been the case. Interest in WWE grew in 2016, peaked, and then fell thereafter. Roman Reigns a draw, the needle mover. Roman, acknowledge him, even though Wheeler Yuta, oh, wait, we'll talk about it in a moment. But maybe the Shield helps. Treating women like actual wrestlers helps. I think NXT helped too. I think NXT NXT, this does not include any ticket sales for NXT in this ticket sales chart that we're looking at here. This is only main roster. But I think the growth of NXT as a brand helps. But those three Shield members help. And I think in some ways you could say that John Cena was towards the end of his career as a full-timer, was sort of at the height of his powers. So there's that. Anyway, we'll move on to a little bit more about Google Trends, where I just wanted to, besides WWE, we all can also see that NXT peaked around the same time, which makes sense that NXT would correlate with WWE, peaks in December 2016. And now I was surprised to realize this, that AEW's Google web search in the United States is peaking right now in March 2022. I know it's April, but we're only looking at full months here. So upward trajectory. We've not seen the ceiling for what web search can be for AEW. Actually, this is a more granular look at the same data for people looking at YouTube or just looking at a line chart that focuses only on the non-WWE brands here, including AEW, NXT. Well, NXT is a WWE brand, but not the flagship WWE brand in terms of that. These are the Google topics that we have selected. AEW, NXT, Impact, Ring of Honor. I believe New Japan is somewhere even below Ring of Honor. Maybe it got up above Ring of Honor at some point. But anyway, Ring of Honor peaks in November 2015. As we mentioned, AEW peaks in March 2022. NXT peaks in December 2016. I'm not going to quiz you about what was happening in NXT in December 2016, Chris Gull, although I am tempted. I want it to be known that I am tempted. Impact peaks December 2010. The Hogan thing is January 2010, right? So this is about a year later.
Yeah.
About a year later, for what it's worth. There's that. We can also look at Japan real quick. I've got six companies for Japan, including WWE, but New Japan is by far the leader. And Stardom, we've discussed this before, Stardom has exceeded WWE. Stardom is number two for web search in Japan among wrestling companies. Number three, looks like Dragon Gate and Noah are in a dead heat here. And then we have well below that All Japan. And well, actually, WWE is above either Dragon Gate or Noah. Anyway, there's that. And that's the same thing we just looked at. Okay. Just running through some things real quick here, I guess. YouTube views for last week. So not, this is for, what does this say? April the 8th, which is a Friday. So two Fridays ago through April 15th, this past Friday, the most watched wrestling clip from a wrestling company is, this is slightly out of date. The top two, one of them is from SmackDown. Acknowledge him. With this says 2.37, but now more than 2.4 million views. Roman Reigns orders the Usos to unify the tag team titles and takes out Nakamura. That's from SmackDown, two SmackDowns ago. But from the same night, approaching with it, you can see the trajectory. Isn't this fun? This is finally we're seeing the products of my Python work. You can see the trajectory where, you know, the Reigns clip, you know, it jumps up to past a million views in less than half a day. It hits 2 million views at about the 1 day mark. And then it quickly flattens out. But then there's this Wheeler Yuta has earned the respect of the Blackpool Combat Club that has a pretty healthy growth for several days after the clip is posted. That clip is now surpassed, at least yesterday. I haven't looked this morning, but yesterday it surpassed the Reigns clip. Of course, I had the nerve to tweet this, and people are sending me hate mail messages about it, but so be it. Yes. So that's what's happening with YouTube. WWE will report its first quarter earnings on Cinco de Mayo, May the 5th, Thursday. with the conference call as usual at 5 o'clock. We'll be covering it as always in the most detail. Finally, we have some, speaking of acquisitions.
Yeah. So, a story that's kind of came out this week. Now, on WrestleMania Sunday, Burt Lauderdale posted this picture on Twitter of him and Stephanie McMahon. And there were the quote tweets were absolutely hilarious on Twitter, but, he mentioned on, I believe, the GCW podcast. The reports keep saying Lauderdale's podcast, but I'm assuming it was the GCW podcast. It's on Patreon.
Yeah.
But he reported that the largest wrestling company in the world was interested in the Bloodsport product, which is the Josh Barnett's Bloodsport that they run 2 to 3 times a year. And he did also mention later on in that podcast that Stephanie McMahon invited him to WrestleMania in a suite. So, of course, people are just putting two and two together. WWE wants to buy Bloodsport. Well, it was pointed out, I saw a point on the internet that technically WWE, are they the largest wrestling company in the world, or is it CyberFight? And recently, CyberFight and GCW came to an agreement to put GCW programming on Wrestle Universe.
To be clear, yeah. Cyber Agent is a IT company that is much bigger than any wrestling company. They are the parent company of CyberFight, which owns DDT and Noah. CyberFight, I'm sure, is much smaller than WWE, to be clear. But they are a large parent company that I believe wholly owns CyberFight.
And just real quick side story too, we mentioned last week about the AEW New Japan world deal. It was also announced last week that matches featuring Wrestle Universe talent, so talent from DDT, Noah, and Yoshi-Pro that were on AEW TV will be on the Wrestle Universe streaming service. So that was also, so just I want to kind of bring up that side note too. But yeah, so we don't know what Lauderdale was referring to. WWE being interested in Bloodsport's interesting because it gives me not tough enough Brawl for All vibes if WWE took control of it. But found it very interesting. I mean,
it doesn't seem like the kind of product that WWE family friendly would want to be involved in.
No, we've talked about the growth of GCW, and I think you started including them on some charts and trends and stuff like that, and how they have grown over
Lavi has an article on WrestleNomics.com that we should plug that covers attendances for non-WWE, non-AEW companies in Q1, including GCW, that people should check out if they haven't already.
Yeah, it's a very in-depth business breakdown of anything non-AEW and non-WWE as far as attendance draws in business. Yes. But yeah, so this was an interesting story to come out. Of course, the internet's running with it that WWE is acquiring Bloodsport, acquiring GCW, but I don't think that's the case.
If they really liked the Bloodsport idea, why do they need to acquire it? They can just do their own thing. If in some universe they wanted to do work shoot fights with no ropes, it's not like, I don't think they would have any problem legally copying that idea, you know?
And my theory, and I have literally no, you know, knowledge of this, but my theory would be that it is Wrestle Universe and that they would be wanting to do a Bloodsport show in Japan.
I see. Okay.
One quick WWE note I wanted to bring up here. I forgot to tell you off air. This past week on Young Rock, they teased the Roman Reigns Rock WrestleMania main event.
Yeah. I mean,
cross programming.
That seems quite likely. I mean, that seems quite possible. Who knows? I mean, I think as John Pollock had a write up on it on Post Wrestling, which I don't have much to add to. It all comes down to what can Dwayne Johnson make time for, and there's an injury risk there that could affect his filming, you know.
This year on Young Rock is very WWE and Memphis wrestling heavy. So
this is on NBC, right?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, we got Lance Russell. Is somebody playing the role of Lance Russell?
No, this is what they did. They did Jerry Lawler in that role of being the interviewer. instead of Lance Russell, they had an actor play Jerry Lawler. Yeah, but we've seen actors play Bam Bam Bigelow and Harvey Whippleman and Jeff Jarrett and others. So it's
Rocky very, Johnson, it's very of course, right?
Yep. His Memphis run towards the end of his career there, yeah.
So Jerry Lawler played, but like he was the actor? Was Jerry Lawler the actor or someone playing Jerry Lawler? No,
there was an actor playing Jerry Lawler in the Lance Russell role.
That's terrible. That's unacceptable. I don't know. It might be a good show. I haven't watched any of it. So.
Oh, so the chat keeps bringing up Raw Underground was Bloodsport. That is true. I mean, that is true.
Maybe it's just Stephanie trying to get at Shane, trying to make him mad.
I will say the pictures were hilarious when, you know, on Sunday, seeing all these GCW talents just taking pictures with Stephanie. So,
yeah, I would love to know the story with what is happening here. Where were they? How did this situation happen? Fascinating.
Well, you know, GCW gets ECW comparisons, you know, they're good for business.
Yeah. Hopefully we see Nick Gage come to Raw and debate Paul Heyman or something. Anyway, that's all. Yeah, this is just the ticket map for Buffalo for Raw. I believe 6,000 distributed, something like that right now. You'll have to give us some reports next week. But that's all. Thanks to everybody for all the super chats today. That was a lot. That was very nice. If you press thumbs up, that really helps people find this, share and subscribe. The live TV ratings talk, I am strongly considering not doing that weekly anymore, but I will do it on a breaking news basis when it's called for, when there's something like Rampage and SmackDown going head to head for 30 minutes as they did in October, or there's some big ratings story, we will do it then. But we're thinking about some other ideas for midweek podcast, something like that. So if you have any suggestions, please throw them at me. The Patreon, as always, is at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You get the TV ratings reports that come out nearly every day, quarter hours for, at the moment, I've been reporting quarter hours for WWE and AEW. You get access to the giant WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. You do not get an audio version of live TV ratings talk every week. I need to change that. And occasional other reporting that I do, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. What about you?
Check me out, Chris Gello on Twitter and Facebook. Of course, I got my other podcast, Rediscovering Indies. It's a monthly podcast. Our part three of our Burr Prentice deep dive should be out next week. You could check that out. RTA Pod on Twitter and Instagram, Rediscovering Indies on Facebook. And and I'm don't have a lot of upcoming dates here, but next week I'll promote my next, well, actually in 2 weeks I'll promote my next like ring announcing event or whatever, but you never know where I'm gonna show up in the wrestling world.
Okay, and that's all for this week. Thanks as always to our media distribution partners. Oh my god, we love our media distribution partners, Post Wrestling. We'll talk to everybody next time. See ya.